we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
This is a battle of worldviews.
And we activate.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
And welcome to this Wednesday edition of AFA at the Core. Fred Jackson sitting in for Walker today on this another very, very busy news day. Have been watching a live video from our southern border. Wait a minute. Do we have a southern border anymore? No, apparently not, because of the video that I'm seeing down there. We are now up to, thanks to Joe Biden's open border policy, close to 10,000 people a day that are now streaming into our country. And it was really quite sad, one of the images that I saw this morning. You know, Governor Abbott of Texas has sent some National Guard troops down. You had about 8 of those National Guard troops, and they put a wire across one area where these illegals are streaming into the country to stop them. It's not because our Border Patrol people don't want to do their job. They're being ordered by their bosses, President Joe Biden and Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, not to do their jobs. Instead, you just let them stream in. And all of this, folks, is just one day and 9 hours before Title 42 comes to an end. Title 42, you may remember, was brought in under the Trump administration during the height of the pandemic, which basically said people approaching the border, seeking asylum in this country, had to stay in Mexico until their case could be heard. That is all going away tomorrow. There have been appeals made to the Biden administration to stop that, to keep it in place. But no, the Biden administration says no. In fact, we are sending 1,500 regular troop members down to the border to do paperwork to allow these people to come in. So what's happening down there? Listening to some of the Border Patrol people this morning being interviewed, there's something called removals. Now, that may sound like the Border Patrol people are going to send them back. But no, thanks to orders from Mayorkas, most of those who come under a removal order, you know what they're doing with them? They're just saying, go ahead, stay in the country. We're at the point where now there's many thousands of these. They're not even being tracked, not even being given a day for an asylum hearing. And those who do get asylum hearings, I am told that as of this morning, some of those asylum hearings are out 10 years from now. So, we're depending on these tens of thousands of people that are streaming into this country. And remember, these are all people that have had some kind of encounter with Border Patrol. There are all the gotaways, a million plus since Biden became president, that are wandering around in this country. Not to mention the human trafficking stuff. Was watching, they picked up an audio interview with someone this morning that's involved with trafficking. And you could hear a voice saying, I'm getting $1,500 a head to bring people into this country illegally. $1,500 a head. This is what's happening on our southern border. And yet, Mayorkas has the audacity to say our southern border is secure. I think that's a lie. I don't think I'm being unkind. That is a bold-faced lie. But this administration is pretty good at that. We're just watching a news conference right now with President Joe Biden. Once again, warning the nation of what will happen if Kevin McCarthy, House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, gets his way on debt default and gets his way on his budget proposals. And once again, the president is saying veterans' care will be affected, that the plan by the Republicans, one of the things is that Veteran Affairs benefits will go away. Kevin McCarthy has said time and time again, that's a bold-faced lie. But right now, Joe Biden, he's in New York at an event there in Valhalla, New York, and he's saying the same thing over and over and over again. I think there's an integrity problem in the Biden administration. Now, with all of that going on, there was a news conference this morning by the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, James Comer. You probably heard some stories yesterday of the announcement of today's news conference, where the intention was to provide evidence to what's been talked about, that Joe Biden, when he was vice president, facilitated using his son Hunter Biden and other Biden family members. They were collecting millions of dollars as Joe Biden was vice president, meeting with people from Romania, meeting with people from China, and setting up deals. Hunter Biden being kind of the front end of this. Remember, he got a job in Ukraine, Burisma energy company? Really? Everybody said, what does Hunter Biden know about energy? Same thing with China. But what happened this morning was James Comer, chairman of the House Oversight Committee, gave us details. What happened was they have been subpoenaing financial information from banks under something called the Suspicious Activity Reports. It's short for SARS. And they've been looking at about at least 150 of these, where they're getting details on transactions between Romanian interests, Chinese interests, and millions of dollars, upwards of $10 million, landing in accounts of Biden family members. All right? At least nine Biden family members making millions off of connections facilitated by then Vice President Joe Biden. With me in studio right now is reporter Chris Woodward. Chris.
Thank you very much.
We have been monitoring this news conference this morning, and we want to talk a little bit about what Comer revealed.
Yes.
Why don't you take us through it?
Yeah, basically Comer referred to Biden as a walking billboard for his family while he was vice president and visiting various countries and setting things up to benefit not only his personal bank accounts, but also those of Hunter and other members of the Biden family. To your point about this just series of networks involving all kinds of LLCs and wire transfers, I want to play some audio from House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer talking about the complicated and suspicious network that the Bidens were found to be using. Clip four.
The committee is concerned by the complicated, suspicious network of over 20 companies we have identified the Bidens and their associates used to enrich themselves. Most of these companies were limited liability companies formed during Joe Biden's vice presidency. The bank records show the Biden family, their associates, and their companies received over $10 million from foreign nationals and their companies.
Now, it's real easy to hear this and say, well, you're a politician. What do you know about business? Some members of Congress actually have private sector backgrounds prior to serving in government. And one of those people is Byron Donalds. He is one of the freshman members of Congress, and he's a member of the House Oversight Committee. Byron Donalds has a banking background, and he said, look, what was going on here was clearly an effort to conceal payments from the IRS and other parts of the government. Clip 12.
Cycling through this many companies serves no legitimate purpose. And as somebody who actually worked in banking, I did that long before I came here. Whenever there was like this many companies just laying all over the place, and you see wire transfers and cashier checks over here going to random members of the family for no apparent purpose, at the size and velocity at which all of this was being conducted, the only logical conclusion of a financial professional is you are concealing money.
Now,
let me restate this. You are concealing money from either the IRS or from credit agencies or from other people in general. That's the only reason you set up a structure like this.
All right. So just to be clear, if you set up an imaginary blackboard for a second, you've got three circles.
Yes.
In one circle, you have various characters in countries like Romania and China. In the middle, you have these basically paper companies, these LLCs. These are just companies that exist on paper. They're not brick and mortar. And then you have on the third circle, you have members of the Biden family, at least nine members. Mm-hmm. It includes Joe Biden. It includes Hunter Biden. It includes Hunter Biden's wife today. It includes his deceased brother's wife, who became a girlfriend of Hunter Biden at some point. And then there are other Joe Biden's brother, Hunter Biden's uncle. So I'm just trying to lay out how all this went. And what happened, that there were checks that flowed from circle number one, Romania and China, through these companies in circle number two. And at one point during the news conference this morning, Chris, they were saying, for every check that flowed through these 20 different companies, the Biden family got about a third of the money that was coming from these foreign entities.
Yes. And the president has claimed this is not true. He didn't get money from places like China. But Congressman Comer said that was a lie. He's received millions of dollars from China and other countries, he and the members of the Biden family. What was interesting is toward the end of his opening remarks, Congressman Comer said he was going to be issuing new subpoenas to get more bank records on this. He was going to be making information of the public so that way they don't have to depend on people like us to tell them what somebody said. They can see it for themselves after spending time online to find that information. And then, interestingly enough, Congressman Comer went on to kind of lay down the gauntlet, and he asked Democrats if they were going to continue to cover for President Biden, or were they actually going to do something about this now that the evidence is laid out before them on the table. And what's interesting here is President Biden, time and time again, has said things like, I give you my word as a Biden. He's, you know, talking to supporters today in Valhalla, New York, about all kinds of things. And as you mentioned, he's sharing untrue things about the GOP bill involving the debt ceiling. They kind of blew a hole today in his claims that he's an honest person and a man of integrity. So at this point, now that you have this information that we just shared, and then you see him continue to come out and speak on television and say things that other politicians are saying isn't true, at some point, more and more people are going to begin to doubt President Biden and the things he says, which does not bode well for his reelection efforts, especially at a time when we see even Democrats don't want him to run again in 2024.
Well, there's another player in all of this, at least one other player, and that is the Justice Department. The Justice Department, whether it's through entities in Delaware or the Biden Justice Department, they have been investigating Hunter Biden for at least 4 years. Mm-hmm. 4 years. And what we got from James Comer and the Oversight Committee this morning was more information than what the Justice Department has come up with or has been willing to reveal and deal with in 4 years. The Republicans have only been in charge now for 4 months in the House. And that's when they won the election. The majority won the election last November. That gave them the right from January on to issue subpoenas. That's the only reason we got this information today, is because they subpoenaed. And it looks, talk about indictments. It's an indictment of our Justice Department, and I guess we shouldn't be surprised too much. Mm-hmm. Our Justice Department is part of the corruption.
Yeah.
Maybe you can hang around.
I can't.
We can talk about this a little bit more when we come back after the break. Because there is so much more. Now, if you're looking for what we've been talking about the last almost 20 minutes, if you go to the mainstream media today, you won't find this. Or if it's this story is there at all, it has been completely buried.
Right.
They don't want you to know what the Republicans have come up with because they're there to protect the Biden family. It's a sad state of affairs in mainstream journalism today, folks. Well, that's one of the reasons we're here. All right, you're listening to the Wednesday edition of AFA at the Core. More straight ahead. Don't go away.
Hey.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
And indeed, welcome back to the Wednesday edition of At the Core. Fred Jackson sitting in for Walker today. With me in studio, Chris Woodward. And we are talking about a news conference that, unless you're listening to this network and or Fox Network, you probably don't know anything about this news conference. It was a news conference this morning with the chairman of the House Oversight Committee, James Comer, and another group of Republicans who sit on that committee. And basically, they were revealing what their investigation over the last 4 months has shown with regards to the monies, and we're talking at least $10 million, that members of the Biden family have received, most of it while Joe Biden was vice president of the country and dealing with foreign entities that had a relationship through Joe Biden with this country, but entities that ended up sending money through 20, well, I'll call it phony companies that were set up by the Bidens or their associates to receive money, and then the Biden family members getting at least, according to Comer and his associates, at least $10 million. Chris, one of the more disturbing things, China and China entities, a big player in all of this, in the Biden family getting millions of dollars. Right. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, as we talked about, Comer and other members of the House Oversight Committee said that Biden was basically a walking billboard for himself and his family, and they benefited from places that he visited while vice president during the Obama administration. One of those places, according to Comer and other Republicans, was China, where communists were basically giving money to the Biden family through a whole network of LLCs and wire transfers. And as Comer did point out during the press conference, President Biden has claimed this is not true. He never benefited financially from China, to which Congressman Comer says that's a lie. Clip three.
The president, when confronted with this information, said it wasn't true. Instead of being honest with the American people, President Biden has claimed since the 2020 election that his family has not received money from China. That was a lie in 2020, and he continues to lie to the American people now. The Bidens have received millions of dollars from China.
All right, and I want to spend a little bit of time and give you some more details, folks, on just what was said this morning about this relationship between Hunter Biden and these Chinese entities. The memo that was talked about by the James Comer this morning alleges that two Chinese nationals made payments of $100,000 to Hunter Biden's professional corporation, one of those paper companies, through a Chinese-backed energy company. Again, Hunter Biden has no background in energy. So one has to begin to why would he be involved with an energy company? Why was he an advisor to Burisma in Ukraine? He knows nothing about energy. Republicans claim that at least one of those individuals had ties to the Communist Party of China. The memo alleges that these two individuals were connected to CEFC. That's a Chinese energy conglomerate. And they had a business relationship with Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden's aggressive new legal strategy initially caused anxiety at the White House, but the memo includes a copy of a bank transaction showing that as of August 4th, 2017, CEFC Infrastructure wired $100,000 to Owasco PC, Hunter Biden's professional corporation. They just gave him names. The memo also includes details from the bank records on how money was moved between companies, including a $100,000 payment to one of Hunter Biden's companies that was then funded by a Chinese-based firm tied to the CEFC, the Chinese energy conglomerate. It all gets very confusing, but that's why I was talking a while about three circles. Imagine three circles on a chalkboard. Biden family, circle in the middle, these companies, these paper companies that were set up, and then you have these entities. And we know what they talked about this morning was two countries, Romania, and they talked about China, which we were just talking about. And Joe Biden, as vice president, had dealings with all of these people. Now, Joe Biden, Chris, has stated, I know nothing about my son's businesses. It is getting really, really, really hard not to say that is a bold-faced lie.
Especially when he has made comments in recent days and weeks that everything Hunter was doing was completely legal. Well, how do you know that if you never had conversations with him about his business dealings? Those two things do not correlate, and it's hard, as I mentioned previously, it's hard to take his word as a Biden now, given everything we've just shared in 28 minutes on this show.
Yeah. But, you know, folks, it all goes back. It really does go back to the 2020 election campaign, the whole Hunter Biden laptop story. And now we have this whistleblower who is coming forward and saying basically the FBI, the Justice Department, they got together and they said, we're going to play down this laptop story.
Yes.
We're going to treat it and go out there. And there was this letter by, 51 people within the Justice Department, FBI, CIA.
Right.
And they all got together and they said, you know, we're just going to tamp all of this down. You know, when the information was coming out, the New York Post, I think it was Miranda Devine who did the original story on this, that Hunter Biden, all the information that was on this laptop of his dealings, Hunter Biden's dealings, all of this sort of thing. That's when this information first came out. But the Republicans couldn't do anything until they got elected, in the House at least, in 2022, which gave them the subpoena powers.
Yes.
But our Justice Department has known all about this for now what's going on 3 years almost.
Yeah.
And there's nothing.
These are taxpayer funded entities that we depend on to protect us, to make sure we're getting accurate information. We're being told the truth, right? What's also upsetting or equally upsetting about this is the vast number of news outlets that worked with Democrats, including the Biden campaign, to completely ignore the Hunter Biden laptop story, which, interestingly enough, some center-left news outlets have admitted in recent weeks, it was true, like CBS.
Yeah.
And it was like buried in a news block, and she tagged out the story basically saying, yeah, it was an accurate story, it turns out. And I bring up the media here because a lot of people believe that we are being just told lies every day on television, on the radio, in print, by various news outlets. Nancy Mace, representative from North Carolina or South Carolina, talked to the press today at the House Oversight Committee, and Representative May said, look, we've given you the evidence. Now it is time for you, government, and you reporters to do your job and do something about this, but don't take my word for it. Here is Congresswoman Mace, now clip 13.
We've done the work for them so they can't screw it up now. If these allegations, any of these allegations, are proven true, then someone with the last name Biden needs to be charged, prosecuted, and maybe spend a little time in prison to take to account and responsible for the actions they've taken today.
Well, it's kind of interesting. That was Nancy Mace. She's from South Carolina. Byron Donalds, who we heard from just a moment ago, congressman from Florida, he at one point in the news conference this morning said to the media that was present there, hey, we're giving you a Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah.
This story is worthy a Pulitzer Journalism Award. What are you going to do with it? And you know what? Their skepticism was well placed, as I've mentioned. This story is either not being dealt with at all by the mainstream media, or it is buried. If you go to Drudge right now, just before coming into the studio, I checked. Drudge does not even mention this story. But here's a story that they are just going ballistic over right now, and that is charges laid this morning against Republican George Santos. He's the New York Republican infamous for fabricating key parts of his life. He is facing multiple charges now that he embezzled money from his campaign, lied to Congress about his income, and cheated his way into undeserved unemployment benefits, prosecutors said today. Don't you find it interesting that the Biden Justice Department just picked today to announce this?
Oh, sure.
When they knew that James Comer was going to hold this news conference at 9 o'clock Eastern this morning, guess what popped up on the radar? This charge against this Republican.
Yeah. And, you know, we can talk about this for the rest of today. And strangely enough, there would still be people in these United States of America tomorrow that would have no idea of what went down today with this House Oversight Committee and the press conference from the Republicans laying out the evidence, as they call it, against President Biden and his family members. I say that because you have news outlets like the Associated Press, which took its sweet time putting out anything on today's press conference. And when they did put it out, they had virtually no comments from any members of the committee. It was the AP telling you what members of Congress said and then why AP doesn't believe what they had to say. And I single out the AP specifically because, if you're unaware of this, listener, whether it's a television news outlet, a radio station, or a newspaper, the AP provides information to all of those news outlets. If they can afford their exorbitant fees, then the AP will be glad to give them the AP's version of whatever story it may be. And unfortunately, some smaller news outlets will just take whatever the AP says and publish it. Or the person reading the news on the air will tell their audience verbatim what the AP wants them to know. And that's why people tomorrow and Friday will have no idea about really what went down today in Washington, D.C., because we have news outlets, not just the AP, there's a whole bunch of others out there, that are arguably doing a job of protecting Democrats or at least politicians they like over the ones they oppose.
Yeah, it's amazing. But you know what? It's why Brother Don started American Family News. We're going back now almost 27 years. He knew what was coming. He saw where the mainstream media was going. That really, it was in bed, and it sure is now with the Democratic Party. You've got to understand this. This is part of the ideology of today's journalists, for the most part. Mm-hmm. They believe in what today's Democratic Party is doing. They are socialist. They believe in the Marxist agenda that we are seeing. They believe in critical race theory. They believe in the accusations of white supremacy. So you have to understand this is ideological warfare where you have the Democratic Party and the mainstream media totally in bed with one another, which is why news services like American Family News is desperately needed right now.
Yeah, one of the greatest news sins that has occurred in my almost 13 years here was about 10 years ago when we learned that the Obama administration spied on the Associated Press to the point that they knew what people there were talking about and what stories they were planning and stuff like that. And the AP did nothing about it. And we never got a stated reason why they decided not to do it. But I would be shocked if somebody in a boardroom somewhere said, well, we'd rather have Barack than John McCain. So they just let it go. Mm-hmm. You were being spied on by your government, and you are responsible for letting people know what's going on in the world and who's doing things that they shouldn't. What happened today should be the lead story on every news outlet, regardless. The Santos story is also a story. Mm-hmm. But this is huge because you're accusing the leader of the free world of illegal activity that any of us listening to this show would go to prison for. But this guy, who, oh, by the way, appointed the people that would investigate him for these so-called crimes, I mean, like, this is a no-brainer of a story, and you don't even really have to spend that much time talking about it or putting together the story. You lay out what they said, you get reaction from somebody that might agree with the president, and wrap it up, and there you go. You did your job, but for whatever reason, they choose not to, and I'm leaning it towards the fact that they love Biden and they'd rather have him than Donald Trump.
Can you imagine for a moment if this was all reversed and Trump was still the president of the United States and there was word out there that his sons were benefiting from his contacts with foreign entities? Let's just say Saudi Arabia, you know, that his sons are making millions of dollars because of their father's relationship with Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
Do you think the mainstream media would bury that story?
No, I don't. If that was an actual story, Don Lemon would still be at CNN, and Brian Stetzer would still have a show called Reliable Sources. Anderson Cooper might just go wall to wall and be sitting there like unshaven, like he's been on the air for like 5 days reporting this information, if it was a Trump or anybody with an R next to his name or her name.
Yes. All right. We've got, what, about a minute left there, Marty? 2 minutes? All right. Just very quickly.
Yes.
Along with telling these stories, there are stories American Family News has that nobody else, including Fox, have. And you're on one of those beats, kind of the legal battles that Christians are facing today out there because of their beliefs. You worked on a story and involved kids, Arizona mm-hmm. Christian University.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, Arizona Christian University is a Christian university in Arizona, and one of the many degree programs they offer there is education. And for a long time now, over 11 years, in fact, ACU, as it's called, has been sending some of their student teachers to a nearby elementary school in Glendale, Arizona, called Washington Elementary School. Earlier this year, that school district made headlines on Fox and Newsmax and New York Post, because people at the Washington Elementary School District all of a sudden had issue with ACU's positions on things like marriage and sexuality. Keep in mind, Arizona Christian University has a biblical stance on those issues. And so they tried to cut ties and not allow these student teachers in the classrooms anymore. But ACU lawyered up, and Alliance Defending Freedom got the school system to change its mind. And they also got $25,000 in attorney's fees. And now those student teachers are going to be back in the classroom starting in the new school year.
All right. That's an example why you need American Family News, folks. And you can get our daily email, AFN.net, AFN.net. Sign up, put your email in there. We'll send you a daily summary. All right, much more ahead on this Wednesday edition of AFA at the Core. Fred sitting in for Walker. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right, we're back after the break.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
And welcome back to this Wednesday edition of The Core. Fred Jackson sitting in for Walker today. Hey, I know many of you have had the opportunity to go to the Holy Land, perhaps with my boss, Tim Wildman, or some other ministry. It is an absolutely wonderful experience to go to the Holy Land, to visit those sites that you read about in the Bible. And I've had the opportunity to go a couple of times. And sometimes when you're touring some of these sites, your tour guide will say, now this is where we think that something happened, whether it is the location in Bethlehem, where they say, we think this is the area where Jesus was born, or some area around the Sea of Galilee, one of the cities, whatever the case may be. And so it's always exciting when folks do studies on these things and they can come up with proof of identifying where these locations are, because it just makes the Bible come alive. And as is often said, when you go to the Holy Land, you'll never be the same. As you read Scripture, it just comes alive. Well, we are thankful for Christian production companies that take the time to do the investigation, to make films. And one of those is Thinking Man Films. And the person who owns that company is Timothy P. Mahoney. And Tim Mahoney joins us on the line right now. Welcome, Tim.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. Now, you've got a new film that's coming out. It's going to debut just in a few days from now. It's called Patterns of Evidence, Journey to Mount Sinai. Tell us a little bit about this.
Well, this investigation for me started in 2003, and I had no idea that it would be 20 years later when we finally got it finished. And one of the reasons for that has that when I left on May 15th in 2003, I left the country of Saudi Arabia. I had been filming an alternative site there called Jebel Alaz, and I was given permission to be there. But when I left, I didn't leave with any footage because it was too hot of a subject matter to suggest that a mountain might be in Saudi Arabia that could be connected to the Bible. And so this film is an investigation that's taken 20 years, as I said, and I've looked at six different potential locations. And this next one on May 15th and May 17th is going to be looking at three mountains, one in Israel called Har Karkum and two in Saudi Arabia. One of them is Mount Beder or Halal Beder, and the other one is Jebel Alaz. And these films are these investigations are fascinating because many people will never be able to get to go there.
Yes.
And I'm going to take you on this journey. We're going to follow the Israelites to Mount Sinai.
All right. Now let's delve into this a little bit. I think most of our listeners have probably read about in the Old Testament as you talk about the journey of the Jews when they leave Egypt, and Mount Sinai plays a very important role. I guess most people's understanding may have been that Mount Sinai is not that far from Egypt, but Saudi Arabia kind of is. So put that together for us.
Yes. Well, that's I actually created, when we make a film, a patterns of evidence film is a scientific approach. And what we do is we look at the scripture. The hypothesis is that the biblical text is a historical document, and we're looking at details within the text. And the first one is the journey to the mountain. We know that there were campsites and there were wildernesses that the Israelites had and were passing through. So this investigation is looking for those campsites and wildernesses, but it also has to deal with travel time and travel speed. It communicates that it was about 45 to some people would say up to 60 days of travel to get to the mountain. Hmm. Not only that, but the Bible says that the Israelites traveled with, God brought them on eagle's wings. They were traveling with a certain amount of haste. Well, how far can you go in a day? And we talked to scholars who would tell us that you could average about 20 miles a day. So if you add that together, you're going to see that the distances are not really, really close to Egypt. If you could go, let's say, in 5 days, you could go 100 miles, then you have some time to travel. You could still have some camp time, but it means that this wasn't necessarily a mountain that was right next to Egypt.
All right, you say there's three possible locations according to your study?
In this particular investigation, we started last fall with Journey to Mount Sinai Part 1, where we looked at the traditional mountain. We looked at a mountain called Jebel Sinai, which was just north of that in the Sinai Peninsula, and then we looked at another one called Hashem El Tarif. Those three mountains are all in the Sinai Peninsula. In this next investigation, we're looking at two mountains that are in Saudi Arabia and one that's in Israel.
Okay, what's going to determine it for you?
Well, I made what I call the Mount Sinai scorecard. And I basically, if you go to our Patterns of Evidence website, and you can also go to fathomevents.com, that's where you can buy tickets, Fathom Events. This was a bit confusing for me, so I said, I need to keep track of all this. And I know your guests, a lot of people have probably gone bowling, so this almost looks like a bowling sheet. We're bowling for Mount Sinai right now. And what I've done is I've taken about the 17 different attributes and the patterns of evidence that you would look for. There are basically some headings. The journey to the mountain has some headings underneath it, campsites and wildernesses. Then there's where is the land of Midian? We investigate that. Then we look at the backside of the wilderness because that's where Moses brought his sheep when he came to a burning bush. And the Lord met him there and said, I want you to bring these Israelites out of Egypt, these Hebrew slaves, these people who were the sons of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. I want you to bring them back to this mountain to worship me. And then the Bible gives some clues, their attributes. There should be a large plain, enough water. There was a stream. It says they were to wash their clothes to prepare to meet God. And there was a cave. There are artifacts, too. Could we find them? Is the remains of an altar or 12 pillars? Could we find evidence of a large encampment, a golden calf worship? What about inscriptions? So these are the types of things that we're looking for in this investigation.
All right. Archaeology is big business in Israel, and they're at sites all the time. Did you rely on any of their expertise as you're looking at these things, and what kind of information that the archaeologists there can base there can help you?
Yes, there's in each of these mountains there are different, and some of these mountains are in difficult places. By the way, when the Israelis had control of the Sinai Peninsula, their archaeologists looked, and they looked at the traditional site, and they scoured the Sinai. You know, the problem was that they didn't really find any evidence for the Exodus. And they came back, and many of them basically said, we don't think that the Bible is accurate or that this really happened. And that then became added to the skepticism of Jericho and other locations that our films have been dealing with. Later on, another Israeli archaeologist went to a place in Har Karkum when he was surveying Israel. And we have to remember, the Israelis have only had control of this area since 1948, trying to, you know, create a nation. And as they've come into it, they've tried to understand the land and the archaeology. When Emmanuel Anate came to this area, you know, he had survived the war. He was surveying this area, and he saw all these inscriptions. And then he found 12 pillars. And he thought, maybe this is, well, he believed this was a holy site. And that's when he wrote his book, The Mountain of God. So we go to that location in the first part of this investigation, and we interview Emmanuel Anate and why he believes that this is the place. Because he says, hey, it has 12 standing pillars, just like the Bible is communicating. He found something that he believes might be an inscription of 10 commandments. And from there, we go down to into Saudi Arabia, because Sir Cullen Humphreys from Cambridge, who is a material scientist, he believes that Mount Sinai was actually a volcano because of the fire and the smoke and the trembling. And so we investigated that location. And then there's another location called Jebel Al-Ahz, which many people might have heard of. There's been a lot of talk about it. It's been... what I call Exodus explorers have gone there. It began with Ron Wyatt, who went to this location and was arrested. Later on, a person by the name of Larry Williams and Bob Cornuke went to these locations and investigated. And then another couple called Jim and Penny Caldwell, who lived in Saudi Arabia. They were the chief people who photographed and videotaped a lot of this, and that information came out in somewhat secretly. Okay. So these mountains have been of great interest, and that's what we're focusing in on this investigation.
Fascinating. We're talking with Timothy Mahoney. He is with Thinking Man Films. And so your latest effort is coming up. It's called Patterns of Evidence, Journey to Mount Sinai, Part 2, coming out as a Fathom event May 15th and 17th. Tell us a little bit about, you know, if it's in a particular area, where can we get more information on this?
Yes, if you go to fathomevents.com, you'll see Patterns of Evidence. Look for Patterns of Evidence, Journey to Mount Sinai, and you can type in your city or your zip code, and that will tell you if where the theater is near you. And that's the best way to purchase your tickets. And we recommend that people purchase their tickets now, because this film is only for two nights. It's only the 15th of May, Monday, and the 17th, which is a Wednesday. And so it's a limited showing. But I also, you know, we talk about voting, right? When films like this, you know, we've got The Chosen that's out there. We've got The Jesus Revolution and other films like His Only Son. When biblical films or films of faith come, it's important to vote, because we're telling the world that this is the type of content that we want to see. Amen. We've made award-winning films, and I want to encourage people, see it in the cinema just to support the 20 years of work that we've done, because it helps us. This is not an easy project to do, to travel to all these countries. We need that support to be able to continue on, because there's more biblical evidence coming, and we've got more work to do. And these types of films really help to affirm faith, and faith in young people as well. Because they're going off to university, and a lot of the professors are telling them, I've got documented information and stories where they've told them there's no evidence for the Bible. And I've had students that basically have had a crisis of faith until they've learned about patterns of evidence. So letting people know that these events of the Bible are historical is very important, and that's why supporting this film, I think, is very important and critical.
All right, go to fathomevents.com. The showings of Patterns of Evidence, Journey to Mount Sinai Part 2, coming up next Monday and next Wednesday, 7 o'clock local time. Go to that website and find out if it's in your area. Timothy Mahoney, thank you so much. We appreciate it. Sounds like a fascinating project.
Thank you again for having me.
All right, you bet. All right, folks, we only got a couple of minutes left. I did want to mention a couple of things. Be praying for the people of Israel. Attacks against, again this morning, coming out of Gaza, Hamas terrorists launching rockets into that area of Israel near Gaza. The latest report that I saw, no injuries, but the people in that area are always under danger. I remember Prime Minister Netanyahu saying at one time, you know, so the world could kind of understand, he said, we live in a rough neighborhood. And that is true. You've got Hezbollah terrorists up to the north there in Lebanon, along the Mediterranean, Gaza, Hamas terrorists, and these attacks continue. So pray for the people of Israel. Also, there is a story out of Washington, Israel-related. Kevin McCarthy, the House Speaker, today announcing he's blocking an event by Rashida Tlaib. She's very much a critic of Israel and the Jewish people, blocking her from hosting an anti-Semitic event, calling Israel a catastrophe. McCarthy canceling that event, which was coming up at the U.S. Capitol, which was going to be hosted by Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib. She's a Democrat. She has a long history. I don't think it's too strong to say she has a strong dislike for Israel. She had sought to reserve space at the Capitol Visitor Center to mark what she calls Nakba, a Palestinian term for the 1948 founding of Israel that translates to catastrophe. Basically, people like Rashida Tlaib and I would say other members of the squad, they're very anti-Israel. And kudos to House Speaker Kevin McCarthy for canceling that event. And you know what he's going to do? He's canceling that event because he has an event that he says supersedes that. He says we're going to, on that day, honor the 75th anniversary of the U.S.-Israel relationship. Amen to that. Amen to that. And be praying for Kevin McCarthy. And also that people like Rashida Tlaib will see the light someday. All right, been great to be with you today. Fred sitting in for Walker. Much more great programming ahead here on American Family Radio. Stay tuned.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.